morning. It's Tuesday.
Good morning. Sorry about that. It's Tuesday morning, the 20th of September, 8 minutes after 8 o'clock. I'm Dean Kallenbach, filling in for Joy Cardine, and that music means that it's Kevin McKinley time, our On Your Money segment. Kevin McKinley, certified financial planner and managing member of McKinley Money LLC, is with us in our Eau Claire studio as normal. The unusual part is, so am I. Glad to be with you, Kevin McKinley. And Kevin and I go way back, about 10 years ago or so. Kevin came to me with this idea of maybe doing a show about money. But this is the first time we've ever been able to do it together, so that's kind of exciting.
You're the one to blame.
Yep, I am.
Good.
In part.
Now I know.
You know, we dragged our feet for a few years, but we got it done. So good to be with you this morning, Kevin. And, of course, the idea here is that we will answer your personal finance questions and offer advice on helping teenagers handle their money this morning. And Kevin, a recent article in the National Geographic sheds new light on the brains of teenagers. And Kevin, you say it leads to some money moves that concerned parents may want to make.
Yes, it was written by the parent of a teenager, David Dobbs. It's a fantastic article because I first saw a link to this and a discussion of it, and I thought, why National Geographic? But of course, for those of us who don't remember being teenagers, they are a strange tribe, and the anthropomorphological and implications of dealing with teenagers and studying them does require a little different take than discussing and evaluating normal people. The stereotypical view of teenagers and their brains is the brains are undeveloped, they make really dumb decisions. Hopefully they survive long enough to live through those decisions and learn from their mistakes. But Dobbs points to several different recent studies that says that teenagers' brains are perfectly wired for where they are at in life, in moving from home out to society. He said the problem, of course, is that the brains are wired to respond greatly to excitement, to novelty, to risk, and to their peers. And so there are some implications in terms of how that might affect their financial future. So we've got some steps that concerned parents should take when they are in charge of someone, as that someone is moving from their teens to their 20s.
Well, where do we start?
Well, let's start with the reason that Dobbs started looking into this. It was after his 17-year-old son was picked up driving 113 miles per hour and actually had a very rational set. I picked a straightaway, a dry road, middle of the day, nobody around. I said, I just wanted to do this and see why. And he said, this makes so little sense whatsoever in that context that I want to know more about how your brain is actually working. My dad had a similar thing. He just would ask me, what the is wrong with you?
That's the shortcut version.
That's the short version, right. It's about cutting the cost and the dangers of driving. Obviously, when a teenager gets a driver's license, there are risks there, but there are also extra costs. The Insurance Institute says that adding a teenager to the driver's insurance rolls in your household will add about $800 a year to your auto insurance premiums. And that's before they get in any tickets, any accidents, or get any tickets. 16 to 19-year-olds are four times more likely to have a crash than other adult drivers, and they're two times as likely to get a ticket for it. So several insurance companies are actually coming out with devices now that can help you monitor your teen. There are cameras in the car. There are GPS monitors to see how fast they're driving. Even there are going to be gyroscopes that could tell you if they're taking turns very quick or whatever. I think you don't have to spend that money if you don't want to. Just buy a little black box for $3 and say, this box knows everything that you're doing and is reporting back to me right now.
Exactly right. Yes, just like the fake camera on the back of the store.
Absolutely. Lincoln Security, I'm not even sure that place exists, but you wouldn't believe how many homes have that sign out in their front yard.
Well, what about when the kids move out of the house and go off to college? Not to be a helicopter parent, but what can we do then?
For better or for worse, that is when their financial future and reputation can be established. And there are actually two dangers here. The first one is their identity starts going out into the ether, either for things that they choose to do or that the schools might have, the information might have, that might be either leaked unintentionally or might be sold to other agencies and companies. So a good way to protect against not only their identity being stolen, but also them getting credit cards that you wouldn't want them to have, is to freeze their credit report. And Wisconsin residents can do that by going to privacy.wi.gov onyourmoney.gov to get started, and we'll have a link to that website at onyourmoney.com. And because teenagers generally have poor decision-making processes when it comes to using credit, parents may actually want to get a credit card for their kids, but also be on the statement, have a very low limit, and monitor every single payment so that the kids can learn credit responsibly, but also develop a credit report that will help them in the future, because many times their credit is going to be considered when they are applying for jobs or applying for student loans or try to get their first apartment or their first mortgage.
Anything that can should be done after they're adults?
Those are some things that should be done at specific ages, but whenever you're talking about a child or a teenager or even someone in his or her 20s, and you're talking about big amounts of money, like your kids or your grandchildren might inherit a large estate or a large life insurance policy, you definitely want to have some kind of trust in place, because otherwise the kid may get all of the money if you're not around to not only protect themselves from their money, but also protect the money from themselves. So a trust can be set up, and a common feature in the trust is where the kids might get a certain percentage of the money at age 25, another percentage at age 30, and then finally the rest of the money at age 35. And also make sure that the kids are on appropriately as the beneficiaries of retirement accounts. A lot of people have a spouse on as a benefit of a larger IRA, and they don't realize that state law is if both parents are gone, the money in the IRA or retirement account goes automatically to the kids, and again, at the age of majority. So you definitely want to have some kind of trust or other structure in place to protect the kids from the money and vice versa.
And by the time they're at that point, then they can call themselves and get advice on Kevin McKinley on Your Money.
Hopefully, yes.
And you can do that as well. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Kevin will answer your personal finance questions and offer advice to you. And if you would like to email, you can do so at onyourmoney@wpr.org. onyourmoney@wpr.org. Good to have you with us today. Kevin McKinley, by the way, is the managing member of McKinley Money, LLC, a registered investment advisor with offices in Eau Claire and Madison. Kevin does not intend to provide personalized investment advice through this broadcast, and he doesn't represent that the securities or services discussed are suitable for any particular investor. Investors should consult with their financial advisors prior to making any investment decisions. Kevin, let's reach into the On Your Money mailbag. A listener wants to refinance his mortgage, take the cash out, and find a guaranteed investment that will earn more than the mortgage will cost him in interest. Sounds like a plan.
Yeah, if only it were that easy, and it's close to being possible, but it's not in and of itself possible. Right now, 15-year mortgages run about 3.5% or a little higher if your credit isn't quite at the top level, and maybe 4% or more for a 30-year mortgage. But really safe investments like CDs and savings bonds and treasuries only pay somewhere between 1% and maybe 3% or so. And some people will say to investors who have a large amount of home equity, you know what, take out this mortgage, borrow this money, and I have this investment that will make you 10% in the stock market over time, or 6% on a fixed annuity, or 5% on a bond fund. And all those things may come true eventually, but they're not as guaranteed to offer that return as the mortgage is guaranteed to charge you that interest. So if you are trying to do that, you're taking on a chance for more reward than the mortgage, but you're also taking on more risk than you might be comfortable with.
Well, many of us, and especially in this age with such low interest rates, are refinancing, and we're taking out a little extra so that we can finance whatever project around the house or that trip to Vegas or whatever it might be. Where might the money from the mortgage go to offset the future costs of the interest?
Well, there are a lot of different things that can be done with it. If you do have home equity and you do get a cash-out mortgage, which is where you take more out even than what you owe to pay off the old mortgage. First of all, if you have any higher interest rate debt like credit cards or car loans or even student loans, I've seen a lot of student loans come in recently to our office where they have 6.8%. It makes better sense to usually to pay those loans off with the mortgage proceeds. They also want to use the cash from that mortgage so that they don't have to borrow money at higher interest rates in the future. Some people I know are taking out new mortgages on their own situation and saying, I know my kids, when they get out of college, they're not going to be able to afford to buy their own home, so I'm going to borrow now at 4% against my house, charge the kids 5%, I earn more money on my money, and they get into a new house. Other people have done this to say, I'm going to park this money aside for future uncovered health care costs and long-term care costs. And later on in our Smart Assets segment, I'll tell you what I think the best use of funds is for people in a certain situation.
And that's a great tease to the future of the program. We'll be with Kevin McKinley throughout the hour. It's our On Your Money segment with financial planner Kevin McKinley. Call us to ask your personal finance questions at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you can email onyourmoney@wpr.org. I'm Dean Kallenbach, filling in for Joy Cardine, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are back on Your Money with Kevin McKinley. I'm Dean Kallenbach in for Joy Cardine. Good to be with you today. And Kevin, a listener wants to, we promised the tease and then we forgot. We wanted to get to some callers now who are asking for your financial advice. Let's move to Sam from Milwaukee. Sam, welcome to On Your Money.
Morning. So my wife and I were talking this weekend, and we just realized we know a lot about saving, but not necessarily a whole lot about investing. And we're really more interested just how does one go about contacting or getting a financial advisor, someone, you know, for the long run?
Well, a lot of financial advisors actually listen to the show, Sam, so if you leave all of your contact information, just give it to us right now, and then list all your assets and any private concerns you have for us as well here. I'm sure someone will be giving you a call in the near term. Now, actually, it's very difficult to find someone who is not only willing to take you on, but whom you can trust, and also, most importantly, I think, will serve you in the manner in which you intend. And there are many places you can go, like investment firms, or there's always a person sitting in a bank lobby. Insurance agents often do other kinds of investing besides just insurance. But if you really want a financial planner and someone who says, I'm going to go through your system, give you a financial checkup, tell you where I think you should be going and what you're doing wrong and how you could change that, you probably want to go to two different websites, and we'll put a link up to that website at our website, onyourmoney.com, later on today. But the websites are CFP.org, that's the Certified Financial Planner Organization, and also FPANet.org, and that's the Financial Planners Association. Both of those sites offer people who are either licensed to offer financial planning or certified to do so, or have agreed to do it on just a fee basis. And many people are worried about being sold products as part of the financial planning process. There's nothing wrong with that as long as you understand the commission costs you're paying for that and the fact that there may be some inherent conflict of interest if someone is giving you recommendations only to try to sell your product. But again, nothing wrong with getting advice from someone who's trying to sell you something as long as you know what they're earning from it so you can kind of perceive if there is a problem with it.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you, Sam. We move now to Nancy in West Bend. Nancy, welcome to On Your Money.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. This is in response to your planning for your children if you predecease them. We set something up when we have an only child, and we set something up, though, when she attained the age, if we died, when she attained the age of, I believe it was 30, she could have the money on her own. Until that time, I have a brother who is responsible, and he was able to grant her request if she had something in particular that she could convince him that she needed access to some of the money. And that worked out quite well, I think. I thought it was a good plan.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea, and it serves several different purposes. First of all, Nancy, you sound like a very astute person when it comes to your financial and estate planning. People like you, Nancy, never die. The ones who don't pay any attention to it, assume they're going to live forever, those are the ones who I worry about. But the people who say, no, I've got everything down, I've got envelopes all lined up, I've got postage stamps on them, you are the people who it never even comes to fruition. And by the time it actually does, you're so old that you don't even know what's going on.
Well, I hope you're right. Thank you.
It's a great blessing. No, I think this is a wonderful idea. And by putting someone who is trusted by you now, but also familiar with your daughter's situation, it actually serves two purposes. Not only does it protect her from raiding the account, but it also gives her an out. So let's say she has a friend or a boyfriend or husband or whomever who says, hey, your folks left you all that money. Let's start that coffee shop we've always wanted to start, and let's just take the $500,000 out of there. She can go to the person in charge of the money and say, I don't want to do this, but I don't want to say no. Can you please say no so that I can still see this person every single day and say, oh, this jerk, why wouldn't he let us give us the money? I hate him. And that's part of the responsibility of the trustee in charge of this. So, again, it's very unlikely to come to fruition. But if it does, you have it set up in a very appropriate manner.
That reminds me of what we used to do with our kids. It was like if you're out somewhere and, just say, my mom and dad won't let me do it. We don't have to have said that, but you can use that as an excuse.
Absolutely.
So homework was the exception. We didn't let them use it in that case. Call in with your finance questions for Kevin McKinley, 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. It also works to email the show at onyourmoney@wpr.org. Let's move next to Joe in Eau Claire. Joe, welcome to Kevin McKinley On Your Money.
Hi, thanks a lot. Really enjoy your show. Kevin, my question for you is regarding stocks. What is a good price-to-earnings ratio?
Well, I think before we can ask what is a good price-to-earnings ratio, we should probably discuss what is a price-to-earnings ratio. That is the dollar price of the stock per share divided by the earnings of the company divided by the number of shares, and it's P over E. So if a company has $2 a share in earnings, let's say, and the price is $20 per share for the stock, the PE, the price over the earnings, is 10, 20 divided by 2. And good is relative to the current situations of the rest of the stocks out there, and more importantly, to what the future prospects are. Past earnings generally don't matter a whole lot to people who are considering buying a stock. What matters is the future. And sometimes a high PE stock can do very well, and sometimes a low PE stock can do very poorly. But generally, you're buying a company, the lower the multiple you can get over earnings, the better the deal is. However, that's not always the case. And especially in today's environment, a lot of people already know what's going on with the company, and they've artificially lowered the multiple because they've lowered the price, and they're aware that things are going to turn around the corner. So generally, historically, 12 to 15 has been where it's been considered a fair price, but it's very difficult to apply that to an individual stock situation and still be confident that that's the only metric you should use to judge if it's appropriate to purchase it.
That's very helpful.
Thank you, Joe. Thanks for joining us on Your Money segment of the Joy Cardine Show. I'm Dean Kallenbach, filling in for Joy, and of course, Kevin McKinley, certified financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money LLC, is here to answer your personal finance questions. Next up is Ron from Sparta. Ron, welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. My wife and I are both above 59 and a half, and we have IRA funds, and we'd like to know if to keep up with the inflation situation, we're thinking about buying gold funds or gold equities in order to, or actual gold that they would store off-site. They've charged us a fee to store it, but we can still use it as an IRA. Is that advisable, and what percentage is recommended as far as in relation to your total portfolio?
Now, that depends on an individual situation, but I will say this. The hard part about buying something that, even though the price has gone up fantastically over the last several years from about $300 an ounce up to over $1,900 an ounce, it's difficult to put a prudent amount of gold in a portfolio that will still make a difference if it really goes up a lot. And what I mean is, let's say you have $100,000 and you say, well, I'm going to put 10% of that money into some type of gold-denominated investment or gold-contingent investment. Well, even if that doubles, it's going to make you another $10,000. And while that certainly can double, the environment that would lead it to double in price would hurt everything else in the portfolio so much that you'd probably end up losing more on the other 90%. So unless you're willing to go all in on gold, which I don't think would be prudent, it's possible, but I don't think it's a good idea, it's difficult for it to make a huge difference one way or the other. So if you said, well, we want to have some kind of investment that keeps up with inflation, gold is a good choice, but I wouldn't recommend you have more than 10 to 20% for most people in their portfolios. It's possible to purchase gold in an IRA. It's usually better if you have some kind of paper rather than the actual bars and the physical delivery. It's hard to find custodians who will actually hold the bars in an IRA. But yeah, I don't think it's the worst idea in the world. I think you should plan to be disappointed, though, because gold has had such a huge run-up. If that turns around and goes back in the other direction, it wouldn't be shocking to see a 20 to 30% loss on that investment at some point in the future.
Thank you, Ron. Let's move now to Peter in Hazelhurst. Peter, welcome to On Your Money.
Good morning. Good morning.
We're here.
Hi, Peter.
Good morning.
Hey, I recently went to a seminar put on by a elder law attorney, and it would occur to me that at some point I would want to distance myself from my financial manager in favor of organizing my demise with an elderly law attorney. You have any comments on that?
Well, it depends on what you talk about, organizing your demise. Is this a Kevorkian issue or...
No, not quite, but, okay. You know, we're all going to be demised sooner or later.
Speak for yourself, by the way.
Okay. And
All of these shows are archived on the web, so I could fall over this afternoon and I'll still live forever. Somewhere there'll be a one and a zero that will equal this show and my voice, and sadly for the rest of you, you can't get away from it. So, yeah, Peter, I don't think that's the worst idea in the world, except if you have any assets at all, something has to be done with them. You don't have to have a financial manager. You can just use CDs and savings account and checking accounts that don't need to be managed per se, but you still have to have some assets that have some sort of value to it. So are you talking about, when you talk about moving it to an elder law attorney, does the elder law attorney want to manage the money or take it over? Or I guess I don't understand that.
No, he doesn't want to take it over in particular, but he can arrange legally ways that it can be tucked away for Medicare purposes or Medicaid purposes.
Mm-hmm.
He would be the one I would think that would set up, obviously, the will, living will, and the power of attorney and all of those things.
Okay, so in this proposition, what would happen? He would transfer your assets to some kind of trust, and then if you need long-term care or nursing home care, those assets would be protected and you'd qualify for public aid, correct?
Right.
Okay. That can be done. It's a lot trickier than the brief summary we've just put up here right now. And even if you do choose to do it, there are a lot of other issues. Most people actually don't go into a nursing home. And if they do go into a nursing home and then pass away, it usually doesn't use up all of their assets. And the amount of public assistance out there now is actually relatively small and will probably become even less. So rather than go through all of those issues and all basically giving money away to qualify for something that may or may not be there and you may or may not need, I would prefer you looking to buy a long-term care insurance policy. The premiums might be $100 to $200 a month, depending on your situation and the type of policy you get. But you can always start and stop that policy once you qualify for it, and that's a much less cost-heavy act for you to do than getting rid of all your assets to it.
Okay.
Peter?
One of the things that they were hit on pretty good was the amount of gifting that can be done over a period of time to reduce your assets.
Yeah, you can gift up to $13,000 per year per person, and then you have several million dollars you can give away as well on top of that. But again, you're giving it away. And for most nursing home and long-term care facilities, there's a look-back period of usually up to 60 months. So you have to give something away and then not need the services for 5 years before the gift will not be included back in. And what happens if you need to put you need that money back, and the person to whom you gave it has either spent it or lost it, or lost it in a divorce or lawsuit or something, and you say, I need this money to pay for myself, and they say, sorry, it's gone.
Peter, an interesting situation. Thanks for joining us on Your Money. If you would like to call for personal finance questions with Kevin McKinley, the number is 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or join us via email at onyourmoney@wpr.org. It's time for this week's Smart Assets segment. Kevin, you promised you'd discuss a way that certain homeowners can use a new mortgage to save lots of money in taxes.
Yeah, and they do have to be in the right situation. Generally, at least in their 50s and maybe in their 60s, and obviously nearing retirement, they have to have a lot of built-up home equity, pretty good credit rating, and then a higher income, usually $50,000 and above for a single person and $100,000 above for married couples filing jointly. And they also have to not be maxing out all of their retirement savings options. And if you meet those criteria and you do get a new mortgage and you're wondering what to do with the money, it can really provide an instant return on the money that you pull out of your mortgage.
It sounds like a lot of people would meet that criteria.
Yeah, here's how it works. Generally, you get a new 30-year mortgage for as much as possible, as much as the lender will allow, especially up to the limit that would then start incurring PMI or private mortgage insurance. So that's generally going to be 80% of the value. Get it with a fixed rate and then plan on paying it back as slowly as you possibly can.
Well, what do you do with the proceeds then?
Our previous emailer said, where do I invest it to earn a higher rate of return? And rather than invest it in something with an eye towards exceeding the interest rate on the mortgage, raise your contributions to your pre-tax retirement plans. These are 401ks, 403bs, TSAs, IRAs. People over the age of 50 can contribute up to $22,000 usually to their at-work plan, and they can also open up a $6,000 account for a tax-deductible IRA or for their spouse if their spouse isn't working. The key figure you want to look at is to get below the 25% federal tax bracket. That's line 43 on your 1040 tax form, and it's $69,000 for married couples filing jointly and half of that, $34,500, for singles. You get about a 30-cent return of your taxes for each dollar you get in that's above that line. So if you're above that $69,000 line on line 43 and you put $10,000 more into your pre-tax plan, it'll save you about $3,000 in taxes, and that's instantaneous. That savings you'll get on April 15th of 2012 when you file your taxes.
But if you do defer that money, you'll have less coming in.
Absolutely. And that's obviously you want to use more of the mortgage money to offset the loss of income. Mm. So if you are deferring $10,000 more into a 401k to save on taxes, use another $10,000 from the mortgage, put it in your savings or your checking account, and practice a little mental accounting or compartmentalizing where that money is there so that you feel better about redirecting the mortgage money into your retirement plan at work.
Aren't they just going to pay more in taxes when they take it out in retirement?
That's possible, but the nice thing about being retired is, first of all, you probably need less money in retirement than you do while you're working. Second of all, you can manipulate your income so that you are drawing money out of your taxable accounts in a way that can keep you below that bracket. And finally, most people get Social Security in retirement. Social Security technically is tax-free, and even when it's added into all the formulas and is technically taxable income, only 85% of Social Security income counts as taxable income, and that's in the worst-case scenario. So you're much likely to be in a lower tax rate in retirement than you are while you're working. And a typical situation is people defer the money and save 30 cents on each dollar, and then they pull it out in retirement, and they might pay 10 to 20 cents on each dollar. So people who are just on the cusp of retirement could make a great instant savings if they put it in while they're working and then pull it out in a few years when they're retired.
Well, then where should the money in the retirement funds go.
That's the great thing about this. Because you're saving more aggressively, you are saving much more money than you have been saving for retirement, you can then invest more conservatively. And you don't have to take as many chances and ride out so many big ups and downs in the stock market, because you can go into more conservative options. And in 2 weeks, we're going to have a special benefit sign-up show, because this is the season when most employees who have some kind of human resources department that send them a bunch of papers, this is when they have to sign up for next year. So we'll talk about not only how much you should be deferring, but where that money should be going in your at-work retirement plan.
Interesting ideas on smart assets. Kevin McKinley on Your Money is the program. I'm Dean Collin, back in for Joy Cardine. Let's take another call. Let's go to Menominee Falls and ask Colleen to join the conversation. Hi, Colleen. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Great.
I'm calling. Okay. I only have a few hundred dollars, and I'm wondering if there's like an E-Trade or Scottrade or something that I can give my, I want to get my nephew, who is like a math genius, to spend some time and invest in the stock market and spend some time messing with that instead of video games, because he could have a chunk of change by the time he's like 25 and needs, we're paying for graduate school.
Well, that's a noble gesture. One of the things if I would ask him is, what are your favorite video games, and what do you think of the difference between, say, Microsoft and Apple and Sega and Sony and all of the other gaming platforms out there? And ask him if he would be interested in being an owner of his favorite video gaming company. And if he is, say, I'll tell you what, I'll make you a deal. I'll give you X amount of dollars right now. You pick a stock that interests you. And rather than picking, you know, some esoteric limited partnership natural gas energy producer that he's not going to be interested in, he can learn not only because he has the stock and money invested, but it's a company he knows something about. I will say this. I have a nephew who, when he was 14, all he would do was play video games, and he's a really nice kid, really bright kid and everything, but that was his biggest interest in life. And we said, we don't know what he's going to do when he grows up. He was just the number one intern this past summer in Microsoft's gaming division and received the highest offer job from Microsoft. So when he graduates from college in a very short period of time, he is going to be going back to Microsoft and working in their gaming division. So I like to hear about that, because it gives dream and hope for all those parents whose kids are just in the basement and down there for 18 hours a day drinking Diet Mountain Dew and eating Pringles, that, nope, he's on his way to Microsoft in 5 or 10 years, so he's studying right now.
May take a little more than that, but an interesting story. Colleen, any follow-up?
Yeah, like, where, I mean, what will take the least amount? I know a lot of things you got to have, like, 2,000 or 5,000. I only have a couple hundred, and I'm stretching for that, but I, you know, so I'm wondering, is there some e-trading or something that you can get the cheapest amount, put the least amount in?
There are several places you can go to do that, and it used to be called ShareBuilder at ShareBuilder.com, and I think they actually redirect you to another site right now, but we'll put a link up to that site at OnYourMoney.com, Colleen, so you can go there and then find out how you can buy a small amount of shares in the name for someone else.
Thank you, Colleen. 800-642-1234 is the number for you to join the conversation here on Your Money with Kevin McKinley. 800-642-1234. You can email us at onyourmoney@wpr.org. We'll be back in just a bit. I'm Dean Collin back, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
My mama told me you better shop around.
8:43, you're listening to the On Your Money weekly segment of the Joy Cardine Show. I'm Dean Collinback, filling in for Joy, but the real Kevin McKinley is here, and we're glad to have him, certified financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money, LLC. You are invited to give us a call, 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, if you'd like to visit with Kevin about your financial situation and ask your questions, and also email at on your money at WPR.org. Time for our Shop Around segment right now. And Kevin, September is National Coupon Month. And it seems that the coupon use is more prevalent than ever, certainly popular even on TV shows nowadays.
That's right. About $3.7 billion was used by Americans in coupons last year. That works out to about a dollar per day per household. And coupons are so popular that the website redplum.com did a survey of about 24,000 people and said, if you won the lottery, would you still use coupons? Hmm. And 96% of those people said, yes, wow. I would still use coupons. Incomes down, prices up. You have a lot of people who are have more time than money, and they are looking to try to get the best deals that they possibly can. And then retailers are meeting that need because they want to make sure that they either maintain brand loyalty or they steal customers from another brand. Then you have the reality shows like Extreme Couponing, which show people bringing $1,000 of groceries up to the counter and paying $6.14 for it. You've got all these daily deal sites. And then finally, you have newspapers, which seem to be, in some cases, the main purpose is to get that Sunday circular into your house.
Yeah, if you go to the Sunday, go to the box to get my paper, and you almost have to have a forklift to bring the Sunday paper in.
That's right.
Huge.
You should. I put on my truss and my weightlifting belt just to bring it up from the front.
That's my exercise.
That's for the week, right? They're still the easiest way to get the coupons, and in some cases, it's really worth subscribing to the newspaper for this reason alone, plus all the information that you can get. About 20% of newspaper ad revenue right now comes just from coupons in the Sunday circular, and that factor has doubled in the last 10 years. Another good way to get the coupons is to friend a lot of these larger supermarket chains on Facebook, and you'll get the first shot at their circulars. And we've talked about this before, but if your supermarket has a particular brand, a store brand of generic goods, a lot of time that generic manufacturer will also offer some really great deals on coupons so that you can save even more money. And then you can go to the coupon sites like couponmom.com. And this is actually good news for the newspapers and for shoppers. The AP, the Associated Press, is coming out with a program now where they are working with about 30 large papers and then many of the big box retail chains, where they're coming up with a program called iCircular, where they will send you electronic versions of coupons to your phone or to your laptop or what have you, which will save a lot of paper and hopefully give you the coupons you actually want rather than things for, linseed oil or something that I've got all the linseed oil I need. I don't need any coupons for it whatsoever.
Problem is, it gets to be, if you're really good at it, you have a lot of coupons. How do you keep track of all the deals and coupons?
Well, especially if you're saving a dollar a day in coupons, like the average household is, and you're spending 2 or 3 hours looking and sorting through those coupons, that's not a productive use of your time. So instead, create a spreadsheet and put the list of all the items on the left side and then the stores on top. And then each week, put an X in the box over which items are that you want to buy at each store. And then you can turn the spreadsheet around and just print it out for each individual store so you know what to buy there and then put the coupons along with it.
Huh. What should you do when the coupons expire?
Yeah, I just found this out a few weeks ago. First of all, many retailers may still accept those coupons.
No kidding.
Give it a shot, especially if it's a manufacturer's coupon versus a store coupon. But another large use of expired coupons is overseas military bases will allow their personnel to use coupons that are expired by no more than 6 months. So there are several programs in place, one at ocpnet.org, which help you assemble the coupons and then send them over so that military families and their personnel can actually use the expired coupons at the base store, even though they're technically no good to you whatsoever.
I keep thinking when I listen to this show, there's got to be one of them where I don't learn something new, but that I've never heard of that before. That's interesting. You've mentioned these daily deal sites before. What's new with those?
It is a gold rush, for better or for worse. This is the Groupon kind of coupons, and where, hey, for 24 hours you can buy this, and or if 1,000 people sign up to buy it at this price, the retailer will sell it or not. Groupon is still the leader, but I think in August I read that 50 different daily deal sites went out of business and 100 new ones came out online just in August or so. But Groupon, has over 50% of the market share. Living Social is in a distant second. Even big, huge companies with a lot of reach and a lot of money like Facebook and Google tried to do this and they quit. The key is the distribution, trying to find the local retailers. And so what I think will happen is you will see radio stations, TV stations, and newspapers that already have an established ad sales team and a relationship with local merchants. Those are the people who will actually be the source of this in the future. The key for this, of course, is using it or losing it. And so later on the website in the week, we're going to talk about how to organize all the daily deal sites so that they're appropriate to you and you can find the best bargains out there without having to search through each one of the literally hundreds of sites out there.
And that's coming up. Couponing alive and well. Thank you, Kevin. Let's move on to phone lines, which are full. Let's go to Patrick in Milwaukee. Patrick, welcome to On Your Money.
Good morning, folks. How are you?
Good.
Great. I've got a probably a common question, and you may review this once a week. I'm about 30 years old. I have a first-year-old, 6 years old, and I have yet to start saving, shame on me, for her college education. I'm wondering, first off, where can I save? Where can I invest? What's the best route? And I really wanted to make sure it wasn't a savings that titled or forced her to go to college in a particular state.
Hey, Patrick, there are a lot of 50-year-old parents out there who are shaking their heads right now and saying, gosh, I wish when I were 30 that I'd been thinking about this. So you've got nothing to apologize to anybody about, and these kids are still young enough where saving a little bit of money now can make a big difference. There are a couple different ways to do this, one traditional and one non-traditional. The traditional one is through a 529 college savings plan, and you can use any state's plan to send a kid in any state to normally a school in just about any state or even all the way over the world. And Wisconsin's plan, though, is EdVest, edvest.com, EdVest.com. And Wisconsin residents do get a small tax break on their state taxes for putting the money in there. So that's edvest.com. However, for people who are younger parents and maybe in the middle income level and having a hard time figuring out where to save and how to save for retirement versus college, I would suggest you actually start saving in a Roth IRA for yourself if you're working, and the same thing if you have a spouse who's working as well. And the nice thing about the Roth IRAs is if you need money for retirement, they'll be there for retirement. But if you choose to use the money for college, you can pull the contributions to a Roth IRA back out at any time for any reason with no taxes or penalties whatsoever. So that can serve kind of double duty as saying, well, this is money for our retirement, but if we do need it for college, we can pull it out fairly easily that way as well.
Sure. I am working individual, $60,000 a year, I would say. Are you suggesting I should invest in both then or just the Roth IRA?
That's a great question. I would start, here's how I would use the hierarchy of savings. I would start with your at-work employer's plan and get any match that the employer offers, and then switch to the Roth IRA till you reach the contribution limits or the amount of money you have, which in your case would be $5,000. And if your spouse is working outside as well, there's another $5,000. And then if you have any money left over at the end of the year, then you can switch to the EdVest college savings plans.
Thank you, Patrick. Let's move now to Michael from Sturgeon Bay. Hi, Michael.
Hey, I have a question. I just graduated from high school this spring, and I was given a couple thousand dollars towards college, but I'm planning on leaving the country for a year first, and I was wondering what might be some good options to invest that money and get some return while I'm gone.
It's a good question, and congratulations, or as they say on just about every corny card I received when I graduated from college, congratulations, right? It's a nice idea. There are no safe investments out there right now, Michael, that pay you anything in the way of a rate of return and will still be there for sure in the same form and size when you get back. So you might want to put it in a savings account, because those of us who have lived a little longer than you know that unexpected things that come up, and if you did need that money, I'd want you to have it as accessible as possible, and while you're gone, have it in a place where it's easy to transfer and get at it. Otherwise, once you have some... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm planning on keeping money in an easily accessible savings account, a decent amount while I'm gone. So if I do need that money, I'll have it available. So I plan on keeping a couple thousand dollars available on there. So.
But this would be extra money then?
Yeah, this would be extra money.
Okay. Yeah, I'd look at, are you going to be working at all in the next few years, hopefully, Michael?
I'll be working up until this fall, but then in January I'll be leaving for a year, and so I will not be working that whole year.
Okay. I would use those earnings as the basis for a contribution to a Roth IRA for yourself. And you can, again, can pull the contributions back out whenever you want for any reason. But if you don't, and you can leave it in there for retirement, I think even a 7% rate of return on $1,000 into a Roth IRA will probably turn into somewhere around $40,000 to $50,000 when you're old, like most of the rest of the people listening to this radio show.
And Michael, I have to congratulate you not only for being farsighted enough to seek financial advice at your age, but of course for listening to Wisconsin Public Radio at your age. Where are you going on your travels?
I'm actually headed to work, or no, traveled.
Yeah.
I'm going down to Tijuana, Mexico to work with a missions organization down there. So.
Well, yeah. Neat, and congratulations. Sorry, I couldn't help it. Michael, thank you for your call. Let's move to Gerard in Milwaukee, who emails, how do you recommend helping a parent refinance a high-interest mortgage of 10.75%? My mother has poor credit, and I've been helping her pay her mortgage payments consistently for a couple of years. That's a tough one.
That is a tough one, but kudos to Gerard, because that's an uncommon situation, but one which will become more common. And I would say that there are a couple different things you can do. One is see if there are programs in her community which allow her subsidized or low-interest loans. Second of all, if you really want her to refinance for it, you may want to be a co-signer for it and see if that makes a difference in terms of her getting a better rate on the mortgage. But keep in mind, on one hand, you co-sign it, you are going to be responsible for making the payments. But you're already making the payments, and if you can get an interest rate, say, at 5% versus 10%, that could make a big difference both to her and to you.
Shelley from Oak Creek, just a minute for your call. Welcome to On Your Money.
Hi. Yes, I have about $45,000 sitting in a savings account, and we want to buy more land, but nothing has come available. I've been sitting there about 6 months. I don't know, should I go ahead and try to invest it? I heard a lot about the Roth IRA you were talking about. Would I be able to use that without penalties then if I invested it that way?
Yes, so if you, when you say we, do you mean you and your husband?
Yeah.
Okay, and are either one of you working or both of you working?
Both, yeah.
Okay, if your income is below, it's about $160,000 or so combined, you can both make contributions to the Roth IRA of $5,000 apiece if you're under 50 and $6,000 each if you're over. And then when you put that $5,000 in, if it needs to stay there for retirement, it can. But if you need to pull it back out because you want to buy some land or make a down payment on the land, you can pull it right back out, again, with no taxes or penalties whatsoever. But it's just the contribution portion, the $5,000 that you would put in. So that's a good start for it. But even then, if you're going to be needing it, you don't want to take any risks with it in the short term, so you're probably not going to make a whole lot with it either. It's more about actually funding the retirement account than it is about making money on the investment.
So thank you, Shelley. Thank you, Shelley. Kevin, we do need to move on. Ask you to tell us about your website of the week.
Well, we mentioned a way that you could track and organize and make sure all these daily deals that are out there are germane to just you. Yipit.com, 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 which answers the question, are all the good domain names taken? Yes, they are all taken. So Yipit.com allows you to set up. They only have a city-specific site for Wisconsin residents in Milwaukee, but they have a lot of national deals as well. So Yipit.com, and we'll have a link up to that website at our website, onyourmoney.com, later on today.
That's a Devo song, isn't it?
Yip it good.
Say, Kevin, four more words before we go.
Spend less, have more.
Thank you much. Kevin McKinley, a certified financial planner and managing member of McKinley Money LLC, who you hear here most every Tuesday in the 8 o'clock hour. Good to be with you. I'm Dean Kallenbach, filling in for Joy Cardine. It's been a pleasure being with you this morning. Look forward to more tomorrow. There's a marriage gap between white and black Americans, and that's bad news, according to the author of Is Marriage for White People? That's my guest tomorrow after 8. Thanks to Rob Ferret for his direction, and also to Amanda Magnus for on-air production. You are listening to Wisconsin Public Radio, the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Dean Kallenbach.